Hands it off. Left circle. McNabb. Dorofeev. One-timer. Blocked. Rattles around. Score!
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Michael takes it on his backhand. Forehand pass. Hanifin. Score! Noah Hanifin powers the goal.
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Sticks down. Let's drop the puck. Let's get ready to go. Hour number two, diving into the Stanley Cup playoffs on a broader picture than the Golden Knights and the Dallas Stars. Game six coming your way tomorrow night at the Fortress. It's the Golden Knights a must win to force a game seven and set up a situation where they win the first two games of the series and take the final two games of the set to advance to the second round and a date against the Colorado Avalanche. We have one game that is just about to start. That involves the Boston Bruins and the Toronto Maple Leafs, also following what's happening between the Vancouver Canucks and the Nashville Predators, who will return to the ice tomorrow. Interesting first round. Not your typical opening salvo of the Stanley Cup playoffs that we are necessarily used to. Normally, it's chaos and back and forth action and responses by teams. It's not even close. The best series of the opening round has been the Stars and the Golden Knights. It was the only series to go 2-2. And the other ones have been 3-1 and been handled, at least five of them, very efficiently. And we're waiting to see the end results out of the Boston series against Toronto. And the Bruins can close it out tonight. And the Vancouver Canucks that have another opportunity to dispatch the Nashville Predators. I'm surprised. I thought this was going to be a first round where the lower seeds stepped up and really made some noise. Colorado's the only one that's been able to post a victory so far.
Yeah, and I thought Winnipeg-Colorado was going to be a lot closer than it actually was. So there's that aspect of it, too. I mean, you know, you look at the Nashville Predators, they're kicking themselves, obviously, for that game four where they just could not get across the goal line. A couple of late goals by Vancouver give them a 3-1 series lead. That was probably the most drama that series has had so far. But then Nashville, to their credit, they go out on the road. They win a game. They force a game six. So we'll see if we can get seven out of that series. And then, you know, as you mentioned, you've got Toronto and Boston, and the Maple Leafs are a team that, you know, after four games, everyone was kind of writing their obituaries. And now you're looking at it from the Bruins' perspective. They had a 3-1 series lead last year over Florida, and all of a sudden things feel a little uncomfortable for the Bruins as well. So we'll see how those games trend over the next couple of days.
John Shannon coming up in a couple of minutes, our NHL insider. Who's been the best team in the first round? Who impressed you the most, East or West?
I'm going to say Colorado. Like, the fact that they were able to score five goals a game against Connor Hellebuyck, the goaltender that's likely to win the Vezina Trophy this year, I think that speaks volumes to Colorado as a team. Colorado as a team that has depth beyond just Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, and Mikko Rantanen. Like, it was a monster series from Val Nichushkin. Arturi Lehkonen was fantastic as well. I was really impressed by how easy Colorado made it look in getting to Connor Hellebuyck and dispatching a really good Winnipeg Jets team.
Winnipeg Jets made history. The first team ever to allow five or more goals in their first five playoff games. They only played five, but that's incredible, that number.
Yeah.
I'll toss out the New York Rangers by how controlled they were against the Washington Capitals and really silencing Alexander Ovechkin. I recorded the pod today, the Chirp podcast. Martin Nietzsche was my guest from the Carolina Hurricanes, but discussed a little bit about Alexander Ovechkin and whether or not Ovi would have been better not make the playoffs then make the playoffs. I kind of got into that, which we dipped our toe in with John Shannon the other day, because it's a much different discussion in Washington today about their performance than it is, say, the Pittsburgh Penguins and what happened there. Biggest disappointment, would it be the Winnipeg Jets or would you go somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to go Winnipeg just because, again, they had such a great season. They start at home. They win home ice advantage from Colorado. They looked great down the stretch. You have Connor Hellebuck. This was the season where, you know, things were supposed to be different. They were supposed to learn the lessons from last year, losing in five to the Vegas Golden Knights and kind of apply them in that first round. And, you know, you had Alexander Georgiev on the ropes, and they just really weren't able to push the pace in that regard. And they couldn't keep the puck out of their own net. So I have a hard time going in any direction other than that, outside of maybe the Los Angeles Kings. But, you know, the fact of the matter is you got to tip your cap, I think, there to the Edmonton Oilers, who showed a lot of range in that series and ability to win in a lot of different ways. And it might just be the Edmonton Oilers are light years ahead of where the LA Kings are.
No, I just thought LA would push a little bit more. Third year in a row against the Edmonton Oilers in the first round. The first two go-arounds closer. Maybe that's the Todd McClellan factor. He's got that system that really does frustrate you, and they went just they tweaked it. And if you're going to not abandon but step away from that, then you better have some really high-end goaltending. And not that they lost because of goaltending, but it does leave you vulnerable in that side. Did you see the goal that we didn't think was a goal last night? Leon Draisaitl eventually gets credit for the puck, in which David Rittich made an unbelievable save reaching back, and they ruled that the puck crossed the line even though it was in Rittich's glove. Did you agree with the call?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? Because, like, it stands to reason that it's in, but you can't really tell definitively that it is, outside of, you know, seeing black in Rittich's white glove.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, that being said, I think that it's probably the right call, but I still think that you have to have a little bit more evidence in that situation to call it a goal. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's probably the right decision.
It's very rare that they rule that a goal because you can't see
right.
The puck completely cross the line. But it was so obvious where the puck was inside the mesh, the pocket of his glove. It was as easy as you're ever going to be to make that judgment call, even though the puck was in Rittich's trapper. I got a text right after that play happened, and it was from a goaltender in and around the National Hockey League, used to be a goaltender and now is part of the coaching fraternity. And he said to me that everybody will switch to dark laces. Now, not every team's like got the black color with the their uniforms like the Los Angeles Kings, but everybody can switch to a darker lace color on their glove to try to just camouflage that a little bit, because it only takes one, right? And then it's in the most high profile situation. And if that's a glove with black laces, it's nowhere near as obvious. And I would sit here and tell you with great confidence that I don't think that's ruled a goal if there's black laces or dark colored laces on that glove.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I guess that's kind of the aspect of it where you look at it and you say it probably shouldn't be ruled that. If you would get two different rulings based just on the color, you know, maybe you go in a different direction. But that's as clear a it's in his paraphernalia. We can't tell exactly, but we have a pretty good idea. It's going to be a goal. So I wouldn't be surprised if every goaltender is using dark laces come next year.
You got some great queries coming in on the text line, 702-876-1340. We'll get to those in just a little bit. But first, our NHL insider, John Shannon.
Hello, Canada, and hockey fans in the United States and Newfoundland.
On the ice at Madison Square Garden, New York meets Montreal in the world's fastest game.
It's officially on. A nice, gentle game full of battered shins, cracked skulls, broken arms, tangled legs, and nosedives.
He used to have the most important job in Canada. Now he's willing to give us a few minutes. It's time to chat with John Shannon.
lot of love for John Shannon on the old social media site X the last few days. John chiming in. So if you've got something to say, you hear John talk a couple of times a week during the Stanley Cup playoffs on the VGK Insider Show. He is one to respond via social media. Hey, what kind of playoffs has it been for the Situation Room as we discussed that reviewed goal last night, LA Edmonton?
Before we do that, my old pal Chris Chapman has hit a home run tonight on the opening. Do you know why, Darren?
No.
I'm in Newfoundland.
Oh, for the service for Bob?
Tomorrow, yeah. I am in Newfoundland, and I did some geography. I am 1,000 miles closer to Dublin, Ireland, than I am to Las Vegas, Nevada.
Really?
Yes. I thought that was fascinating.
You're 1,000 miles closer to Dublin than you are to Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's 3,400 miles to Las Vegas, and it's 2,100 miles to Dublin, Ireland.
Okay.
And I'm still in North America.
Without transportation, which one is easier to get to?
Well, you know that there used to be, the famous Broadway play Come From Away.
Yes.
There was the stories of the planes landing in Gander, Newfoundland. There used to be a famous flight from Gander, daily flight, Gander to Shannon, Ireland.
Hmm. Oh, Shannon.
So, yeah. Well, of course, the Shannon, Ireland is on the Shannon River. And my grade 3 teacher used to say, well, Mr. Shannon, you know the mouth of the Shannon is 3 miles wide. So I didn't really understand that until I was about 30.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So anyway, to answer your original question.
Could you swim there?
I think it's been a rather calm playoff season in the Situation Room. You know, I don't think there's been very much controversy. I don't think anybody could argue about the David Riddick glove last night. I think that they've done a great job with the review of major penalties and either reduced them or reinforced them from 5 minutes to 2 minutes or 5 to 5. I think this has been one of the quietest, we hate those guys in Toronto years, that I've seen in a long time.
How about the officiating?
Well, I'm biased, okay? I like a high standard. I like rough-and-tumble hockey. I think it's what's most entertaining. And when you get into that, there are times it's going to be very subjective about whether that's a hold or that's a hit or that's interference. I think it actually plays into a team like Vegas who can play that way. But I think the officiating's been fine as well.
John Shannon with us on the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Vegas is up against it. Game 6 tomorrow night, down 3-2. Looking at the series, it appears that there's very little. Like, Vegas is happy with their game. They're not getting the goal support. What's your assessment on who's controlled this series that's gone back and forth between Dallas and Vegas?
This is Rocky Balboa and Apollo Creed. This is guys just swinging away. I mean, the makeup of the clubs, the style of play, the fast pace. In many ways, I do think that when you look at the success of both teams on the blue line, that it is going to fall on goaltending. You know, and Aiden Hill or Logan Thompson and Jake Ottinger on the other side. It's going to be, you know, a simple little mistake here and there that's going to be the difference. This is cutting hairs, I think. Both teams, and trust me, people in Vancouver and Nashville and Edmonton are cheering for a seventh game and hoping that these two teams, you know, kick the heck out of each other, because if the winning team gets through and is healthy, the team, whether it's Vegas or Dallas, is going to be scary in the second round.
Said it's been the best series, but that's also because a lot of the other series were so efficiently dispatched.
Well, you know, I don't, like, for instance, the winner of this series plays Colorado. I would define Colorado as surgical. Their top five players were the best five players in the whole series against Winnipeg. And when that happens, when you have MacKinnon and Makar and Rantanen doing what they're supposed to be doing, then the Avalanche are going to be difficult. That said, I think that both Vegas and Dallas match up pretty well against Colorado and can give Colorado a real push in the next round.
John Shannon chatting with us from Newfoundland on the VGK Insider on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
You know, John, you mentioned that it might come down to, or probably will come down to, goaltending when it comes to Game 6 and potentially Game 7 between Vegas and Dallas. So, you know, kind of the big question here is, who starts for the Golden Knights in Game 6? Should it be Logan Thompson or Aiden Hill?
Well, let me ask you, Ryan. Do you blame Aiden Hill for the loss?
No, not at all. I don't blame goaltending for any of the losses in this one.
Yeah. I do think there's something to, and neither do I. I do think there's something to be said for Hill's experience last year in big games. The fact that he now has a game under his belt in the playoffs, even though it was wasn't a win. I think you have to go back with Hill. That's just my gut. I mean, Thompson has not been a problem. Goaltending has not been a problem for the Golden Knights, but I just like Hill's experience of what he went through last year to be something that I think that the Golden Knights could build on.
Did you see any of the locker room cleanout and media availability from Winnipeg today?
I did, yeah. Yeah, it was heartbreaking. It's funny you say that because I actually felt bad for guys today because, you know, to me it was very humane what they were saying. I mean, they thought they were working their tails off, and people would say, well, they don't know how to get to the next level. And when a guy like Connor Hellebuyck says, you know what, I was in the zone. I just couldn't see the puck. Gosh. I mean, it made me feel that they were human, you know, and too often, Darren, in this game, and we're guilty of it every day, is we put these guys on pedestals and forget at times that they're human, and we criticize them and we overpraise them. Today was one of those days you realize that, oh my goodness, he's just like me. He puts his pants on one leg at a time, and he's going to go home to his wife and kids and have the same problem. What's for lunch tomorrow, honey? When do we go to the lake? That way, it was a revelation for me today in watching some of those guys.
So different than a year ago going through this process. So where is Winnipeg now?
Well, I think they're better off than Winnipeg because nobody's criticizing the culture in Winnipeg. You know, what happened last year in Vegas was, you know, the demand for change, that they had to get rid of some selfish players. They had to get rid of the me-first mentality. And now in Winnipeg, there is a team-first mentality. Now, the question, quite frankly, is do they have the right guys to be on the team? You know, they went out at the deadline and got two big players in Sean Monahan and Tyler Toffoli, and between the two of them, they had one goal in this playoff series against Colorado. So where do they fit in? They have a couple of free agents they need to look after that have been good there for the long time. Brendan Dillon's one of them. But I think overall that things are, I think they're much, it's funny. They lost in five to Vegas last year. They lost to five to Colorado this year. I think things are actually more positive, much more positive this year in Winnipeg than they were 12 months ago.
Chatting with John Shannon on the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
So from the Winnipeg Jets to the Edmonton Oilers, they finish off a five-game series with Los Angeles last night. To me, like, I look at that series, it showed some range. The Oilers win a 1-0 game. Stuart Skinner, I thought, was really good. What, if anything, impressed you about the Oilers and an efficient first-round series against L.A.?
Well, you're going to laugh at me, but really impressed me was Leon Draisaitl. Because, as you guys know, I do a bit of work on the Edmonton broadcast. And in the regular season, there's nobody more frustrating to watch in the National Hockey League than Leon Draisaitl. And he tends to every once in a while sulk, and he worries about things he shouldn't be worrying about, and he hates, sometimes he doesn't like the line mates he has. But in the playoffs, he's able to ramp it up. And that's what he's done this series, and he's done in the last couple of series that this team has played. Dreisaitl, who, by the way, is on making $8.5 million and due for a giant raise a year from now, Dreisaitl has been the difference. Here's the other issue, Ryan, and maybe I'm too close to it, but the Edmonton Oilers, they get on these rolls, which they're on a roll right now. Everybody's playing at the optimum. They're doing the right thing most of the time. They start to believe in themselves a bit too much, and then they lapse. The question is this team mature enough to realize, no, we can't lapse? We can't fall into making the same mistakes that we did after the 16-game winning streak and went 500 for the next 10 games? That's the real challenge in Edmonton. Chris Knobloch has to keep this team in check, and it's difficult to keep a team in check that has that much talent and was that successful in a playoff series against L.A.
Is Leon Draisaitl the modern-day Brett Hull when it comes to voicing his opinion about line mates? Because Brett was the best at it. Like, he would line up in a face-off and be telling the person on the other side of the wing, because he was a winger, and he'd be like, can you believe who I'm playing with? And meanwhile, the center can hear him 4 feet away Brett trashes him.
Yeah, no, Brett was in a class of his own, Darren. You know that. There was nobody like Brett Hull. My favorite line, that one, and it was an old pal of yours, Dallas Eakin. Have you heard this story with Dallas Eakin and Wayne Gretzky? Have you heard Dallas tell this story?
I don't think so.
Okay. So Dallas and Wayne played for the New York Rangers for a brief period of time together. And it just so happened, Wayne is obviously on the first line, and Dallas is lucky to be on the fourth line. And it just so happens, at one point, Dallas is stuck on the ice for a face-off with Wayne as his centerman. And so Dallas is so eager to help Wayne out, he skates over to Wayne and says, this is according to Dallas, this is right from the source. Dallas skates over to Wayne and says, hey, Wayne, where do you want me? And Wayne says, Hartford.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, poor Dallas. Oh, that's so bad. You know, Dallas was famous for another reason. He caught Tamo Salani's glove when Salani broke the rookie goal-scoring record, threw it up in the air and shot it. It was Dallas Eakins playing for the Winnipeg Jets who came in for the celebration, ended up catching the glove.
Yeah. Oh, no. Dallas has always been around greatness. That's one good sign of a good quality bottom six forward.
One thing I forgot, too, was I think it was Adam Foote who was trying to chase down Tamo on that rush. So there's a lot of greatness on the ice during there. Do you think Vancouver can, if they end up coming out on the right side of this series against Nashville, can push Edmonton? They were very good at the start of the regular season against Edmonton, were responsible for knocking the Oilers off kilter at the start of the season. But when it comes to playoff time, do you think the Canucks have enough?
Who's in goal?
I don't know. It could be one of four guys, and I'm putting John Garrett in there, our friend John Garrett, as the fourth guy.
Well, for the record, I sent Jimmy Rutherford a note. I said, if they go to a fourth guy, you're the man.
Yeah.
Jimmy got back to me very quickly saying we wouldn't last very long. So.
Yeah, I think John's just got a better track record with the Vancouver fans because he played there.
No, I don't know. You don't hear very positive things about Thatcher Demko. Can Casey DeSmith be healthy enough to win a series? Maybe. Anybody that's playing the Oilers the next round is going to be in tough, particularly if the Oilers get these 4 or 5 days rest.
Right on. Tomorrow is the service for Bob?
Yes. Yeah. We did. There was a visitation tonight and saw the kids and had, I hate to say it, but we had a great time telling Bob stories. And tomorrow is the actual service at a church here in St. John's, Newfoundland, that he was a choir boy at the age of 11.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you're there. It's perfect. You should be on hand, and I'm sure those stories were marvelous about the great Bob Cole. Thank you, John. Appreciate it, and we'll catch up soon.
And I just want to say hello to my old pal George and wish him luck tomorrow.
Done. I won't get into whether or not we talked about you today, but but it may or may not have happened. Thank you, John. There's John Shannon coming to us from Newfoundland. We'll be back with one-timers on the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
Carlson left corner. Centered one-timer score!
It's time for one-timers. One-timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury. It's about the recovery.
Only game of the night is underway in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Game 6 between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Boston Bruins. That one is at Scotiabank Arena in downtown Toronto, where the Maple Leafs will try to extend their season for a second straight game and in the process force a Game 7 in this first round set against the Boston Bruins. 0-0 halfway through the first period. Another slow start by the Bruins. They had one shot the other night in the first period against Toronto. It was 1-1. But again, just a single shot through the first 11 minutes of this game. As things get a little tighter around the Boston Bruins, it was a year ago that they let a 3-1 lead slip away against the upstart Florida Panthers. And this wouldn't be near as much of an upset as that, which points it towards the possibility of going to a Game 7 for the second straight year.
Yeah, it sure feels that way, at least, you know, right now, kind of watching the game. Toronto has really done a good job pushing the pace. They've had the puck pretty much the entirety of this first half of the first period, and the Bruins, you know, maybe it's creeping up into their heads. Maybe they're playing not to lose. I'm not really sure what the hang-up is right now in terms of finishing off a series, but it does feel very real that the Boston Bruins are overthinking this situation.
No Austin Matthews for Toronto in this game, and I think that is a surprise that he's still out of the lineup, but it also works into the equation of, like, how many times is Boston going to be able to get through a game and not have to face a guy that scored 69 goals? I thought he'd be back tonight. He's not, so you better take advantage of it right now.
You would think so. I mean, that should be the thought process and the messaging for the Boston Bruins, but up until this point in the game, they haven't really had much of anything. And, you know, think about it from the other side of things. If the Leafs can somehow win this game and force a Game 7, perhaps you get Austin Matthews
right
back for that one, and then all of a sudden the pressure is really dialed on the Boston Bruins. Even though they'll have Game 7 at home, it would feel like all the momentum, at least in this series, right at that point, would be with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Okay, here's a weird question. Who has the advantage right now? Because it feels like all the pressure is on Boston.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's simply because the Bruins are, 0-4 in their last four elimination games.
Yeah.
This, if they lose tonight, they're 0-5, and all of a sudden, you can't really excuse that away. And I think that, you know, it's human nature to have kind of those things creep in, especially when you look back to last season, the historic regular season, the fact that they had a 3-1 lead, the fact that the mirror images of this round and last year's opening round are pretty same. You know, it's a 1-0 series lead, then it's tied at 1, then you go up 3-1, then you lose Game 5 in overtime. It does feel like the Boston Bruins are the ones kind of hanging on for dear life, which is a very new scenario in an opening round featuring the Toronto Maple Leafs.
We have the Toronto-Boston series winner will take on the Florida Panthers. Panthers, a great article on NHL.com. Outside of a couple of guys, they're all watching this game tonight. I think that's cool that professional athletes are tuning in to see the teams that will face them in the next round. That's old school stuff.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I think it's awesome, and you know, you have an opportunity to watch the game, to scout your opponents at the same time, but enjoy the hockey. Like, let's go.
Just enjoy it. Do you have a gut feeling about Carolina and the Rangers in round two? That's the only matchup that we know is going to happen.
I really don't. I think the New York Rangers are really, really good. I think the Carolina Hurricanes are really good. you know, Frederick Anderson's been fantastic. Igor Shesterkin was great in the first round. Like, I think goaltending's kind of a saw-off in that situation.
Which is saying something, because all year that's been a question mark about Carolina. And Freddie's come in, and Anderson's done a great job.
Yeah, I mean, Frederick Anderson's been fantastic since getting back into the lineup. And, you know, goaltending at a point in time was a question mark for the New York Rangers, too. I mean, Jonathan Quick did a great job throughout the majority of the season, but it took a while for Igor Shesterkin to find his game, and he certainly found it going into the playoffs and through the first round. So I think the only thing that I know for certain that is that I'm kind of expecting it to be a long series, 6-7 games. I think that they're both really legitimately good teams, and I don't think there's an easy, clear-cut winner in that series.
The Carolina Hurricanes have done their best over the last 13 hours to quell any conversation about the future of Rod Brind'Amour involving another team. His contract's up, and there was some reports that Tom Dundon had walked away from the negotiations, and that maybe Brind'Amour would be replaced. And I don't know whether it was about cash or whether it was about Rod is very loyal. He makes sure that his assistants sign new deals before he agrees to terms. So I don't know whether there was some of that in place. But in the last 13 hours, it's done a complete turnaround. And now Rod himself says he believes something is going to happen. I don't know whether that's exactly the case or whether they're just trying to put out a fire. But it's become the biggest story coming into this series involving two great teams.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, you know, I think Rod Brind'Amour is a great coach. Obviously, I think that he has been pretty adamant, clear that he wants to coach the Carolina Hurricanes. He doesn't necessarily want to go other places. But then again, you know, we've heard that before, you know, individuals take jobs somewhere else. But that being said, I mean, is there a reason that you could think of as to why you wouldn't want to re-up with Rod Brind'Amour? I mean, other than this
cost.
Team not maybe taking step.
I think it would just be cost.
Yeah, just cost, Ed.
It would be negotiations. Rod is one of the lowest paid coaches in the league. Tom Dundon knows it. That's how he's structured his team. He's got a great franchise, but he is set in his ways in certain things. And the only reason why Rod doesn't come back is either there's something to do with his assistants or the support staff, or they can't come to terms financially. He had a great assistant coach, Dean Chenault, went to Toronto and got a boatload of cash as assistant coach with the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's just the way they operate in Carolina. There's no right or wrong. If you can have success being budgetary conscious, then good on you. I think more teams should follow that case, but that's the only reason why I think that it might go down that path.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I think, again, Rod's a great coach. He embodies what that team is, and they've seen great success with him. So, I mean, it's a no-brainer to me, but as you mentioned, Tom Dundon's got his own way of doing things, and it's been fairly successful to this point.
And Seattle has an opening. Ron Francis, Rod, longtime teammates. We know how that connection works. I'd be shocked if Rod went across the continent, across the country to Seattle, but who knows. Talks have started on a contract position between Steven Stamkos and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Stamkos said his agent and Julien Brisebois have had a quick conversation, and even Stamkos and the general manager had a brief discussion. Stamkos went out and scored 40. He was a 40-40 guy this year. Mm-hmm. I wonder where the number is now, whether it went up because of how he perceived he was dealt with this year.
I mean, if I were Steven Stamkos, I would say the number has gone up because of how I have been treated this year. And listen, there's nothing wrong with Julien Brisebois just saying, I want to see where we're at the end of the year. I want to see what everything looks like. And then we'll have these conversations. But if I'm Steven Stamkos, I put up 40 goals in the regular season. I was the best player for the Tampa Bay Lightning in the postseason. I don't know that I'm going to go team-friendly or budgetary when it comes to this next contract.
Yeah, and Breesmaal was well within his right to do that.
Yeah.
It's just we're so used to guys automatically being re-upped at basically whatever term they want or being taken care of. And the pendulum swung so far towards the players that it shocked a lot of people. It'll work out the same, I anticipate, that Steven will be happy and he'll finish out his career with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But taking a step back and making sure that everything is good and going down a path that you want, I'm fine with that with Julian Breesbaugh. I was a little disappointed by how much heat there was or criticism of that negotiating strategy.
Well, I think it was just because it was very clear and Steven Stamkos was very open about how upset that made him. And like he's got every right as the captain of this team, as a guy that has really bridged the gap between what the Lightning were with Martin St. Louis and Vinny LeCavalier to where they're at now and in winning two Stanley Cups and going to three finals in a row. Like, he has been the face of that franchise. And so I think I understand it from both perspectives, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with Julian Breesbaugh trying to figure out what his team truly is, what they can be moving forward, and how Steven Stamkos fits into that.
34 years old, $8 million a year. Does he get a raise? Is it the same? Where do you think it goes with Steven Stamkos?
Yeah, I mean, I can't sit here and say that, you know, a 40-goal guy shouldn't be making at least $8 million a year. Like, I understand that you're talking about 34, mid-30s, all that, but, I mean, the rate of production from Steven Stamkos, he's right around his AAV, you know? So I don't know that he's going to get a raise. I don't know how the Tampa Bay Lightning feasibly do that, but I would imagine that he's somewhere in the ballpark of $8 million AAV.
I'm going to predict 4 years at 8.5, which is exactly his AAV. He stays where he's at money-wise and gets 4 years. Write that down. I'm curious whether I'm even close on that, but the 4 years I think is going to be important. 34.
Yeah, I'm with you there. If it were me, I'd probably only want to commit to 3 years. But
if you're the Lightning,
you know, well, yeah, if you're the Lightning, I think you commit to three. I don't know that you go four. That's a long time.
It is. It's one segment is a long time on this show, and
it's very true.
We handle it very well. L.A. Winnipeg made the big trade in the summer. Both are out in five games. Who's in the better spot moving forward?
I would still say, or I would say it's Winnipeg.
I'm with you.
You know, I just think the vibe there, the culture there, all of it, it's moving in the right direction. I know the result was the same this year as it was last year, but, you know, if Colorado goes on a run, you know, you can look at it and say you ran into a team that went deep in the first round. It's unfortunate. It is what it is. That being said, like, I look at the Los Angeles Kings, you know, Andre Kopitar is not getting any younger. Drew Doughty is not getting any younger. You certainly went a little bit further in on the high-end talent pool and not as much in terms of team depth. And Pierre-Luc Dubois has not really lived up to the expectations, and you've got that for another 8 years. So I think it's Winnipeg by a mile.
Which team's goaltending situation would you like?
I'll take Connor Hellebuck for sure. Well, I mean, like, that depends, right? Like, if the LA
you've
Kings
got
go
flexibility
out and get a
with LA.
Yeah, if they go out and get a goalie in the offseason, if they go out and make a
that's
splash.
That's where I'm
if,
going with it. I would take LA's goaltending situation, but I think Winnipeg's further ahead.
That's probably fair. Like, listen, if LA ends up with, I don't know, like a Linus Ullmark or something like that, then yeah, I'm with you. But, you know, they're going to have to do that in the offseason, actually go out there and bring in a goalie.
Those are one-timers catching up with Chapman next on Fox Sports Las Vegas.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
Oh, Christopher.
Well, hello, Darren. Been a while since we've done this, but listening to John talk about being in Newfoundland, I'm always reminded. I remember watching this documentary about on 9/11,
yeah.
How there were like, I don't know how many, probably 35, 40 airplanes that were flying from Europe to the United States. And because of the situation, they had to divert. And many of them landed in Gander, which
Gander and St. John's.
Yeah, which are the last two. Like, if you've ever flown to Europe, at least from the Northeast, like I have many times, you always fly over St. John's and Gander. And Gander is like literally the last place that you see on the map before you head out over the Atlantic. But I just remember they talked to all these passengers who had to get off the planes there, and they talked about just how hospitable and friendly the people were. Like, there were people who were getting off the planes and they were staying in the houses of the residents.
Well, because there was no hotel rooms. The Toronto Maple Leafs were about to hold their training camp in St. John's that year. My wife worked for Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment then. She was there, and they processed people coming off the planes inside Mile One Stadium, and all the people that were there for training camp, because the team wasn't there yet, had to say double and triple up in their rooms to create more rooms for the people on the plane. And it was just absolutely incredible hospitality and a great showmanship of humanity.
Yeah, I mean, just a stick tap to those incredible people. I mean, I couldn't imagine living in that city on that particular day, and all of a sudden you have 40 planes flying from Europe to the United States or Canada having to land in your small town. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, when I look at the Gander Airport website, there's only three airlines that fly in and out of there, Air Canada being the big one. But
Have you seen the musical Come From Away?
No, I have not.
The play, if I don't know whether it will come here. I actually saw, I may be making this up, but I thought I saw where it is going to play at some point in Vegas. And if it does, I encourage everybody to go check it out. It's based on a true story, and the other one is the production I saw was fantastic.
Yeah, I would imagine if it's going to be anywhere, it'd be at the Smith Center, which always has some incredible events.
But I'm cultured on the show. Like, I bring the culture to the show.
Yeah, listen, I've been to a bunch of musicals. I enjoy musicals. I want to see Book of Mormon. I've heard that that's really good.
What was the last play that you saw?
Last one I saw, I have to think.
Oh boy. We used to in high school.
It was pre COVID. I know that.
In high school, we would we'd take part in the plays. Then we'd in Brandon, and we'd drive into the theater in Winnipeg on the big bus. But the only reason that my buddies and I went was so we could go drink beer in Winnipeg, and then we'd sleep through the plays.
I saw Spamalot twice. Once on Broadway, and then once here in Vegas. The guy who played Jay Peterman in Seinfeld actually played the lead in the one here. The one in
you
New York.
You who loves the theater on the Golden Knights? Alec Martinez.
That does
every
not
New York
me.
Trip, he takes the guys to see a production.
Does not shock me.
Game 6 tomorrow night at the Fortress. See you there.